Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Integrity Matters by Eternity. My name is Chooks, and with me in the house today is Professor Rosanna Burke, who is the Director of Educational Psychology, and she manages the program for the Institute of Education at Marseille University. Hi, Professor Rosanna.
Kia ora, Chooks. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, kia ora. Well, today we're going to be exploring what inclusive assessment is and strategies for making assessment work for learning. I've recently been following your work, and you recently did a piece around making assessment work for learning. So before we get into that conversation, can you tell us a bit about your academic research, your professional background, and what excites you about the work you do at Marseille University?
I started my career as a primary school teacher. And that's where my interest in learning and assessment arose, because I was really interested in how young people conceptualise their learning. And I noticed that when these children face barriers to learning, it often wasn't because they weren't motivated or bored, but it was because their views of what they were trying to do were quite different from my views as a teacher or the task expectation. I also noticed that there was a difference between what a child could do on any given occasion to what they would do when they came to do assessments. And that depended on how much they valued that assessment. So as a result of some of the experiences as being a classroom teacher, I became a psychologist to understand learning and assessment, especially those who are marginalised in their learning or experience barriers outside of their control. So in other words, I was interested in what systems failures happened to prevent the enhancement of young people's learning. So I worked as a psychologist for a while and then went back into a university to teach and research and do my own doctorate work, which was on students' conceptions of learning and self-assessment in context. And that work foregrounded for me the way learners choose what efforts they will go into, and if they don't value learning, their assessments of that learning are meaningless to them. So in that work, I kind of came across a metaphor, the chameleonic learner, and I turned to the phrase or the notion of a chameleonic learner because I followed through a number of young people over a one-year period, and they became different learners according to their context. So the same learner in mathematics could be very different on the rugby field or when they were doing judo or when they were in a dance group, for example, or when they were in writing. So they learned how to adapt according to their environment, a bit like a chameleon. But also, the ones that succeeded were the ones that kept a strong identity. So they still knew who they were as a learner, but could adapt according to context. Whereas there were some young people who didn't have a strong identity or a strong sense of self, and so they would try and adapt according to each context, but not exactly know how to read that context. So if they've just come off the rugby field, they might try and still use those same techniques and strategies that work really well for them there, but not in a mathematics class. And so that's that work then took me on to work in the Ministry of Education and back to a university later. And so my work at the moment at Massey is it's still that same fundamental interest in how people learn and the context within which they learn, and then to enable their learning. So I've extended this now to my researchers out of school, recognising that learning is not institutionalised or that it just belongs in formal settings. And so the assessments we use in formal settings are often restricted and determined by our regulations. So I found the power of self-assessment in school and higher education is critical for learners. So that's what really excites me is can we make a better way for learners through our assessment so that the assessment really does work for learning?
Great. I think that's a really good segue into what the conversation for today. And I must say, you do have an exciting background. I often say teachers make great assessors, but putting the hat of a psychologist, that's a next level of expertise. So thank you for sharing that background. Moving on, what does it mean to make assessment work for learning, and what are some guiding principles to support an approach for this?
You're right in that a psychologist involved in assessment is an interesting dynamic, because usually it's the psychologist that's way more motivated in the assessment than the actual young person, and that's one of the things that I learn. So within a higher education setting, you know, we all know that there's a number of roles and functions that assessment has, and it is around accountability, and it does track how students are doing. But I have found that this places too much emphasis on grades and marks, and our gaze shifts away from learning. And so although we often think of assessment as a way to, you know, prove, control, or document learning, I think that if we have learning as our focus, then we've got to find ways for assessment to support that. So I guess one of the things that I'm really interested in is creating really useful, meaningful, authentic assessment tasks so that students see themselves in the assessment in the same way that they should see themselves in their learning. And so instead of them asking questions like, what do I need to prove that I can pass this course, they might be asking different questions like, how can I demonstrate my knowledge, or how can I demonstrate my excitement of this knowledge, or how can I show that I've really learned and grown through this course? And so the assessment shouldn't be the driver that students use to necessarily direct or determine their learning, but we need to encourage their driver to be around more their aspirations or their motivation, or, you know, or even the volition, you know, that just internal urge to learn and know and then immerse themselves in the learning. So I think if assessment is working for learning, then students will actually enjoy the process of learning, and they'll also create maybe a greater sense of identity through this, because we know that assessment can induce anxiety or stress, and some students might feel the need to plagiarise or use other examples, and that means assessment's not working for learning at all, and it in itself becomes the unintended barrier. So I guess to make assessment work, it's the assessment tasks that we choose to use are ones that students can relate to, and it's not necessarily the essays or the tests or the examinations, but it's much more interesting, lively assessment tasks, like designing YouTube clips, for example.
Quite interesting. Looking at making assessment work for learning, and I come from a school of thought that feels that assessment should be inclusive. And I think, to your point, designing more authentic assessments and making as a strategy to make assessment work for learning. But it's also important to know what is an inclusive assessment. So what is an inclusive assessment, and what elements or frameworks support the development of inclusive assessments?
That's a huge question. Because for an inclusive assessment, we need an inclusive institution. And that seems to be the starting point. We need inclusive of staff, of students, our curriculum and pedagogical content. That should all be inclusive. And so for marginalised people, or those with disabilities, those from Indigenous cultures or marginalised cultures, or not the dominant culture of the university, the university can be a very isolating experience. So that, to me, is a starting point, is how inclusive is our institution. And then an inclusive assessment activity will be meaningful for that student. They'll see their identity, they'll see their culture, they'll see their themselves or their community in that. And so the assessment task should be broad enough to enable that to happen. So if a student feels a sense of like belonging in a course or sees themselves in the assessment task, they will own it, and they'll identify more with the task, and they won't look for other examples or ways of copying, because they'll be so embedded in that. The other thing is that I think the staff, like educators, need to believe in these students and want them to do well, which university staff do. And so it's about setting up systems to support and respond to their students and recognise the diversity within the student cohort. So every year for any given course, the student cohort will be different, might be a different diversity, different range. And so we can't just keep doing the same assessments each year. Otherwise, it just becomes meaningless to that cohort of students. We often get student feedback on assignments just to see what they're thinking about that. And sometimes we get surprises, like we think we're putting in a really innovative assessment task. And then sometimes students will say, well, we know how to get the grades for essays. We know the template for doing this. And this sort of assessment is actually making us work harder. But long term or sort of over time, they actually find that they start to enjoy it more.
I think it's... If I may share an example of time when I was while I was at uni, I remember, I think I'm trying to remember her name. She's a professor, Professor Susan Zinger. She was in my knowledge management class, and one of the things she was trying to do was tackle the idea behind inclusive assessment. She felt the literature, something as simple as the literature we were studying, was very Western focused. And one of my tasks was to think about my country, Nigeria, think about what literature, just take the conversation to that context and share with the class. And that's why I love knowledge management as a subject, because she allowed me to think outside of the Australian, New Zealand, or even the American context. And I was able to think more critically about why this knowledge management can apply in any sector. Well, think about what's in the literature that has been done by someone from my country, right? So that was quite exciting,
that's a fantastic example. And it's really cool that you had a lecturer who could see that potential for creating the opportunity and space to enable that to happen, because that's exactly what I'm meaning, is that if you could relate to it and go back to, well, what are other people saying in Nigeria and writing about this space, I mean, you will understand the context and it will be so much more meaning for you. You'll know the politics, you'll know the geography, you know, you'll know the vibe. And so that learning means that also when you share it with others, you're actually creating a knowledge base that keeps extending. And to me, that is what an inclusive assessment is. It's not just regurgitating, but it's pushing the knowledge and the boundaries. And that's I think that's a beautiful example, Shoots.
I think that was just one of the few things that, and she was aware that designing learning required a lot of work, and to her knowledge, there's still a lot of work to be done in that space. Because we're talking about inclusive learning, and although there was a lot of work in embedding Indigenous culture and Torres Strait Island learning in subjects as part of internationalization, it wasn't really about that. We had people coming from India and China, so that was a very good example for her to stretch and say, hey, go find examples in your different countries. Just moving on, with regards to beginning the conversation around inclusive assessment, and I think we've already touched on what I think was one of the challenges, is trying to contextualize it for students. What are other challenges with designing inclusive assessment, and how might technology actually help in managing these challenges?
One of the things, as we've been talking about in relation to culture as an example, is it clearly shows there's no one right answer. And that's kind of one of the challenges for both universities and, you know, staff and students, because I used to teach a course in were learning and learning theories. And it was really the Western theories of learning that had gained the prominence. You know, we were brought up on the classical theories of learning and the behavioral theories and the cognitive theories and the sociocultural theories. And when you start digging into that, into the indigenous theories of learning, it kind of really opens up and the whole notion of what learning actually means, which extends way beyond a linear notion of learning. And that's why I think we have to be so careful with assessment, because quite often the assessments chosen are going back to our linear views of learning, not to that broader conceptualization. So one of the challenges is that given that there is no one right answer, technology allows us to be much more part of, immersed in, and engaging with a global community. And so that's where whatever field of study students are involved in, they will find that it's quite uncomfortable at times, because there's so much information and knowledge out there. It's being able to discern what they need, and you know, students often talk about going down rabbit holes where they're constantly finding pieces to follow. But that's part of critical thinking that we're trying to encourage students at university level, is understanding what to believe or what pathways to follow. So that would be, you know, one of the key challenges. But the other thing about digital technology, it does provide for more freedom. And I think the way we facilitate our teaching and our assessments and how students engage with us, that I often find I get to know students better through the online presence at times than through face-to-face, where they might not be so willing or so confident to share ideas. So there are both challenges, but there are also ways that technology can be used to support perhaps more in-depth learning and assessment.
With the thinking, I think I can't remember where I picked this up from. There is now a move to co-design assessments with students, and just because we're looking at making it more authentic, and also thinking about introducing some level of inclusiveness in it. What would you say are some of the challenges that educators will face while in the development phase with students?
So co-designing with students is a very powerful tool, because it's actually part of the learning for students as well. The movement in student-staff partnership is part of that process, where the power of the teacher is shared with students. Now, the challenges for institutions are that there are always regulations and assessment guidelines, where often you have to have predetermined the assessment and predetermined marking rubric and predetermined how many assessment points, the percentage, etc., so that for a cohort of students that come in, it's really hard to get past a university's policy that you can say, well, we're going to co-design this. So one of the things is that I have incorporated a few ways of being able to do that. One is that I have co-designed marking rubrics with a cohort of students that then can be used in the subsequent cohort, used with them for them to gain clarity around the marking rubric. So sometimes it's students co-designing for other students, so it's going back for the next year. Another one is where we do have to set criteria for our marking, that we separate out a task criteria with a quality criteria, and the task criteria is what we do need to see in this course, and the quality criteria is where students choose how they want to be marked or what they want to have a focus on for the way that they've engaged with this particular assignment. And we've played around with ideas for that as well. So So co-designing is a really important aspect, but I think we're still all trying to figure out ways where when we're in institutions and there are strongly held views about institutional norms, or this has always been the way, that progress or what we aspire to do is often seen as being risky. So institutions that are risk averse are less likely to pick that up. But I've always enjoyed Barbara Rogoff's work in sociocultural theories of learning, where she often talked about that we know we're learning when we're on the border of incompetence towards the edge of competence, or the edge of competence on the border of incompetence. And it's kind of, that's where learning is uncomfortable for students. And so we really encourage them to sort of push themselves as much as they can, and that they will know that they're learning. But stability is safe. That's, you know, in learning. And so people don't necessarily push to the boundaries of where they could go. So that's where, you know, we've been trialing some new co-designing some assessment strategies with students. For example, students developing YouTube clips, they find they learn more when they do something like that rather than just do a standard essay or written assignment.
Yeah, I often think that co-design should be a strategy, and could be a strategy to actually increase student buy-in into why they need to learn and why they need to do assessments. But that's just my opinion. As the world is evolving and the rationale of assessments remaining to prepare learners for this world, and that's becoming more pertinent, what do educators need to do to as they consider reimagining or rethinking their assessment?
I think your key thing there is about preparing learners for the world, because quite often we don't know what the future will hold. And as it unfolds, we have to be really strategic, solution focused. So I'm looking at assessments that support learners to think. So it's not just regurgitating knowledge, and it's not just trying to apply it, but to actually make them think. And so one way I've been trialing over the years is actually self-assessment, where it's not self-marking or self-grading. It's supporting learners to self-assess the learning of any given area. So, for example, they might have done a conventional assignment, like a 5,000-word essay on learning theories, looking at, you know, Western and Indigenous theories of learning. But then a self-assessment might occur, say, 2 weeks after they've completed that without them knowing what it was going to be beforehand, which might be, write your own theory of learning in 14 words, no more and no less. And so students then, with all this knowledge of their learning theory, then have to get it right down to 14 words, no more, no less, and write their theory of learning. And we get some fantastic results there. I've tried all sorts of different self-assessment strategies, and I often get challenged by, would we want pilots or specialists like surgeons or doctors to get through with self-assessment? And my answer to that is always that self-assessment is one part of the assessment tool, but they do need it. So we've seen a number of examples over the years about pilots who have, like Captain Sullenberger in New York, who landed when both jet engines stopped and he had to land on the Hudson River.
Yes, I remember that.
Yeah, and in that I haven't seen the movie, evidently it's a movie, but I listened to all his interviews after that time, and he was making the same sort of notion of he had only seconds to ascertain, you know, the skills and expertise of those around him and who would do what. And he said he'd never been trained in something like that. It's not something you train to, but you bring everything together. And in that moment, he was self-assessing. Another example is here in New Zealand. We had someone have a heart attack in the middle of a flight, and there was no doctor on board, but there was a vet, and the vet was able to support that person. And she also talked about, this isn't something I trained for or was assessed on, but she self-assessed her skills and knowledge in order to do that. So I think there's a lot of examples about, there will be novel and unexpected situations that arise across any discipline or any field of knowledge for any professional. And there will be times where you need to self-assess in that moment. And part of our university's role and responsibility is to prepare people for that situation that we don't know about. And so by helping to create self-assessment tasks within all our courses, we're getting students prepared to be able to perform in the time that they need it and not rely on a mark or a grade or a stamp or a sticker, but actually in real life self-assess. So that's one way about rethinking assessment.
This just made me remember the fire drill we do when we were in primary school. And so, yeah, I don't know why it took me down that path. But, yeah, I think you do make a really good point. It's preparing students on how to think as things are evolving, as opposed to creating that one size. This is what you're going to do in class. And they expect that that's what they're going to do in real life. And they get into real life and something totally happens.
Yeah.
So that process of getting them to think, okay, this is not what I trained for, but how can I think through this process? So that's a really good point.
And I think with self-assessment, it's not an isolated activity. And so in that moment, it's self-assessing what needs to be done. It's self-assessing what skills and competencies you have to do that. And it's self-assessing what are the competencies of those around you that can perform their tasks as well. So it's a really complex process of understanding what needs to be done and your role in it. And so universities, irrespective of what our discipline is, have a key role to play in supporting that process.
So what are your thoughts on how educators and institutions can make assessments work for learning?
Well, I mean, obviously all universities have assessment policies or assessment guidelines. Mm-hmm. And so that's the rhetoric. I think what they should do is that they should be able to readily translate into practice. And that means diverse practices and be broad enough to enable responsive changes to assessments as the student cohorts change. I think this requires a high level of trust within higher education. And so with that is the responsibility and the accountability for educators, for us to be informed on assessment literacy and responsive practices. You know, that notion of trust is what academic integrity is all about, that we can, combined with, you know, staff, students, and the policy, the senior management, is that we have respect for each other and enough trust in understanding what we're doing that we can make changes quickly and responsively. So there are certain expectations around everyone there, including our students. I think that we need to take more risks and also to do more hard work with how we prepare the assessment tasks. Because a lot of universities time poor, the balance between research and teaching is an issue that often comes up. And so with large class sizes, assessment is usually one that's given to others to do, or where there are big teams of assessors. And so we need to find ways to enable our assessments to be manageable, but also be interesting. As we talked before about partnership, the student-staff partnership, I think that's how we can make it work. by including students more. And I still know right to this day that students will look at the course that they're going to do and they'll go straight to the assessment points and think, okay, what's this worth? Is this worth anything? What are the assessments? And so that's why I think those assessments should be pretty interesting to ensure that that they focus the energies in the right places.
Oh, that's very exciting. That's very funny because I remember doing exactly the same thing. Just go straight to the assessment. What do I need to do? When is it due? And you put that in your calendar. Yeah.
Yes. And you still might ask for an extension.
Exactly. Just to wrap up, we know that the process of reimagining assessment can be a big challenge. And most of the time, one person could start the conversation in an institution and that person leaves the institution and it just becomes a hassle trying to sustain that process. So for educators and institutions looking to reimagine university assessment, what are your best strategies to begin and sustain this process, and how might they best engage with technology to make this a success?
Well, I guess if the assessment policy is a really good one that, you know, that's your document that staff are going to go to. To me, though, a major starting point is actually to reconceptualise what learning is. And so that should be really clear in both assessment policies and documents around that. As part of that, I think that we need to actually understand and appreciate how far we've moved from learning theories that are static and knowledge-based, and translate those into, because they usually translate into traditional forms of assessment. But if we start looking at learning in quite a different way, we'll have much more socio-cultural, historical, that political side of learning will start to make more visible. Yeah, I think that the exploring with students again, finding the best way to demonstrate their knowledge and their thinking and their critical thinking is a way to start, and the application of that. It's going to involve creativity as much as the pragmatics. And so if the policies and the frameworks and the teams around the students are able and open to different creative approaches, then I think we've got a really good starting point. And students themselves are bringing in so many ideas that every single cohort has ideas about what assessment means to them, what sorts of assessments they can use. Because I guess for me, I'm working in education, educational psychology and assessment and learning, that the sorts of assessments that I would use are not necessarily assessments that other disciplines might use. I have worked with VET colleagues over different assessments, and they were trialing self-assessment strategies as well. So I guess it depends on, you know, what the culture of both the college as well as the university has around things like learning and teaching and assessment. And I guess I'm really fortunate to be in a university that does allow for different ways of looking at assessment, different ways of engaging learners, you know, in our teaching and in our assessments across our institute.
Excellent. That's a really good way to wrap up today's episode. I want to say a big thank you to Professor Rosanna Burke just for sharing your insight, bringing your passion, and also sharing how we can apply these things across different institutions. Thank you again for your time today.
My pleasure. Thank you very much.